One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rumble, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your support. If you haven't rated the show already, it'll take you 2 seconds to do it. Hopefully you think we've earned 5 stars. If you want to connect with me through the website, macroaggressions.io is the way to do that. And social media, you can find me on X at macroaggressions, Instagram at macroaggressions_podcast. We appreciate our sponsors. We could not do this show without them. We've got some new ones. Van Man is the newest sponsor. I mean, they're making outstanding lotions, soaps, tooth powders, and now deodorant. They got a brand new deodorant out there. Fantastic stuff. All natural products. I've got the vanilla body butter right here. It comes in a cool little jar. I've got the tallow and honey balm. Same thing. If you're interested, if you're looking for all natural products for lotions and toothpastes and, you know, tooth powders, things like that, check out vanman.shop. There's actually a link down in the show notes. You can click on that. It'll take you right there as well. But they're doing it the right way. The vanilla body butter only has a few ingredients: grass-fed beef tallow, shea butter, olive oil, honey, vanilla oil. That's it. Not a bunch of chemicals, not a bunch of bullshit. Just exactly what you're looking for. So if you're somebody that is looking for skincare products in a variety of different types, go to vanman.shop. If you find something that you like, the discount code on your way out the door is macro. That'll save you some money. And if you buy enough, they have free shipping there as well. So go to vanman.shop and check it out for yourself. Also, hopefully you already have your storable food, but if you don't, there's a place that can sort that out for you in like 10 minutes. That's My Patriot Supply. They've been a sponsor here for a long time, kind of dropped off there for a little bit. They're back. Fucking and perfect timing too, because if you don't have it, you're going to need it. Just better to have it tucked away in your basement or in some closet somewhere, and, you know, A year early is better than a day late when it comes to the food situation. We saw what happened just with toilet paper during COVID and how insane that got. So, you know, just put yourself in a situation where you don't have to deal with that anymore. You can go to the website that they built specifically for us, preparewithmacroaggressions.com. The link for that is down in the show notes. You can click on it. It'll take you there. They've got all kinds of discounts already happening. You can get 3 months of food. They'll send you a couple buckets. You can get a year as well. You can set yourself up for a while. If you've already got your food situation squared away, good for you. You're most definitely in the minority. But if there's somebody in your life, a family member that maybe doesn't live down the street from you, you can just have it sent to them. Just go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. And when it gets to the shipping part of it, just tell them where you want it shipped. You know, easy to do it. You don't have to freak everybody out. You don't have to tell them it's the end of the world or anything like that. You may just, tell them it's a, you know, just in case of a natural disaster, depending on where you live. If it's California, just in case of an earthquake. If it's the Midwest, just in case of a tornado. If they live on the coast, it's just in case you have a hurricane. You know, whatever it is, if you live in a house that doesn't have a blue roof, maybe it's going to be a massive forest fire in your area. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot that could be going on right now. But if you've got food and you know you're covered for a couple of months, you'll be much better off than everybody else. So do this. Just go to the website, check it out for yourself, see what you think. Preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Let's talk about the Rockefellers. I feel like we talk about the Rockefellers a lot. There's a lot to talk about, but I want to specifically talk about the Rockefeller Foundation. When you do this for a living, you find yourself learning way more about these people than you ever thought you would, or maybe even that you care to. But it's worth understanding how they think and what they do and what they're up to. And we've done a lot of work on David Rockefeller and his family. But they started the Rockefeller Foundation not because they're a bunch of do-gooders looking to help the world. God knows that's about as far from it as possible. But they did it for PR purposes. That's it. I mean, that's really the reason why. We'll get into a little bit more of the details. The PR purposes is what kicked it off. But I'm going to go into the areas that they deal with, that the Rockefeller Foundation primarily focuses on. I want to talk a little bit about eugenics because it's a huge part of this. Let's get into who they donate to, their creation of the Population Council, isn't great, and how they promote globalism. They're a big driving force behind globalism. And we'll wrap up with their role in COVID. It's a big one, too. You will most definitely want to hang in there to get the info on COVID because, well, it's not like it's not going to come back around at some point. Maybe not in the form of a coronavirus that's sweeping the globe, giving everybody the sniffles for a while. But instead, it's going to come back in some other form or fashion. And it pays to know what they have been doing in the run-up to COVID and how you can use that as a map to guide what we might be coming into in the future based on what they're preparing for. They give it away a bit when you prepare for certain things and then those certain things happen a few years later. You go, oh, geez, maybe they know something we don't know. Or it's a gigantic coincidence, which I really doubt. So let's start with this. Let's start with the launching of the foundation. It started in 1913. 1913, a very interesting year, a few years after the breakup of Standard Oil, which we've talked about in our Monopoly episode. It's also the same year. 1913 was a very important year. It was the founding of the Federal Reserve and also the Internal Revenue Service, really a horrible year for the United States and really the world, I guess, as a whole. It was founded by John D. Rockefeller Sr., John D. Rockefeller Jr., and a guy named Frederick Taylor Gates. No relation to Bill Gates, though, you know, he could be. I mean, he's not, but it when you, when the behavior is similar, the proximity to these bloodthirsty eugenicists is obviously is similar as well. But sadly, no connection. It would just be a little too good if it was. But these three started this group, Rockefeller Foundation, and through this organization, not only have they given away a ton of money, they in current day dollar figures, they've given over $15 billion away, and of course these gifts come with strings attached, and they're not a bunch of altruistic do-gooders out here trying to save the world. They most definitely are trying to depopulate the world, enslave what's left of it, and get everybody onto their financial scams. And they've done a great job of doing it. To be fair, you know, the Rockefellers get a bad reputation because they've been successful in their march towards depopulation and evil. You know, if they were terrible at it, you'd never talk about them. So we do have to recognize that they have a plan. It's not good for humanity, but they are a group that has been able to use their financial resources, their governmental connections, and their desire for for thinning the herd to get quite a bit done in the 100+ years that they've been in existence. They have trained 13,000 Rockefeller fellows. That's what they call them. You go through this indoctrination program. Not sure if they're drinking baby blood. I don't know if the 13,000 get initiated into that. That seems to me like it might be a smaller group than that. I don't know. Yeah. At what point do we kill the babies and drink their blood? That's the question. That's what I want to know. Is it the test that gets you into this group, the 13,000, or is that something else? Well, I'll tell you what happened to kind of start this whole thing off is that when Standard Oil broke up in 1910, they rightly had a public relations problem. But they had all the money in the world. They just didn't have good PR because people were catching on to the sorts of things that they were up to. And so they went about trying to remake their image. And part of that had to do with showing this charitable side to them. So they started the Rockefeller Foundation as a vehicle to basically disguise their intentions or trick the general public into thinking that they had turned over a new leaf and that they were now just out there to help the people. They'd seen the error of their ways during the monopoly trial, in which they were ultimately broken up, and now they've decided to just help out humanity instead of, you know, putting their boot on the throat of humanity, as they have been doing for many, many years, as they monopolized the oil and gas industry, got themselves involved in the railroads, and eventually launched the medical industry and petrochemical, I don't know, juggernaut that they control to this day. One of the ways in which they got themselves into this new industry, the medical industry, was through something called the Flexner Report. We've talked about that before, about Abraham Flexner and how he was brought in by it wasn't just Rock, it was Rockefeller and Carnegie, and they had worked together on the compulsory schooling component of America, and they were also pretty interested in doing the same thing for the medical industry. And part of this had to do with using this Flexner report, which was, they sent him out to go study all the existing medical schools. This is 1910. What they found was there was a bit of they were a bit disjointed. They weren't necessarily operating from the same playbook. They were saying, one was saying one thing and the other was saying something a little bit different. And so there was no homogenization of the information. And that's one of the things that the Rockefellers said that they wanted to make sure, that there was standardization with regard to how you become a doctor. And so in the aftermath of the Flexner report, they wound up creating the medical school accreditations concept, or I guess the group that's in charge of certifying schools as being compliant medical schools. And after doing that, they wound up whittling the number of medically compliant schools down to about 26. And worked up from there. Now there's plenty of medical schools, but you all have to go through the same sort of accreditation process. You have to be teaching the same things. You have to be teaching about vaccines. You can't teach chiropractic, or you can't talk about herbal medicines or naturopathy or any of that stuff. You can't be working with Tesla machines or anything that's deemed to be non-traditional. Not because it doesn't work, by the way. But because it doesn't work for them, because it doesn't put money in their pocket. And this is a criminal cartel. And so they used this report, went to Congress with it, they were able to basically criminalize competition to their medical school cartel that they had created. They basically put everybody else out of business, which their medical cartel includes not just hospitals, but also universities and medical research facilities. So it was the death of natural medicine once they got involved. And it was reinforced by the medical schools and the licensing agencies, which they themselves created and used the government to regulate. Not regulate them, because they were already partnered up with the government, but they used it to regulate so that other people could not compete with them. So the five areas of focus that the Rockefeller Foundation concentrates its efforts on, yes, destroying the world is the end goal, but they do have, they have to be methodical about it. And so they've got five different components that they focus on. The first is medical health population sciences. And when I say population sciences, you can read between the lines and understand that that is eugenics. Second is agricultural and natural sciences. The third is arts and humanities, because, you know, they're a bunch of humanitarians. And number four is social sciences. And the last one is international relations. That is, that's where you get the likes of Henry Kissinger. International relations. The goal of this, it's pretty simple. They want to re-educate the public, especially with regard to the way they view health and the way they view wars. They want you to feel differently about these whole things. That's the reason for the international relations side of things, and also the medical health population sciences. This is important. If they can get you to believe that health comes from a pill or a shot or from medical schools only, and that anything outside of that is quackery, then they've got you. They've got you as a customer for life. And when you understand that their ultimate goal is to depopulate the planet, then you have to ask, why am I a customer of the healthcare industry that was started by a family that's ultimate goal is to depopulate the planet? And the answer to that question is, you've been had. You've been duped into this. That's the reason why you believe it. I believed it for a very long time. It wasn't until I got honest about healthcare, sick care, what's really going on, that I realized, oh, this is a trap. This is the number three leading cause of death in the United States behind heart disease and cancer, the medical industry. So it's not there to help you. It's not, oh, shucks, we messed up and lost one on the operating room table today. Or, oh, no, these vaccines gave a bunch of kids autism. Bad luck. No. This is the goal. This is the goal. The goal is not to make you healthy. It's not what it is. The goal is to keep you on a treadmill being sick. Healthy enough so that you can still probably go to work, but just constantly sick. Sick people don't revolt. Sick people don't question the nature of reality. Sick people don't protest the Rockefellers. So keep everybody sick and profit from it. pills, the pills that you take, the pharmaceutical pills you take, are come from the petrochemical industry. They're made of oil. they're not good. They're not made from grass. It's not some. It's not lemon seeds or anything like that. It's petroleum based. That's what it is. So it's a brand new opportunity for the Rockefellers to sell their petroleum that they have always been in the business of selling. They just created a new category for it. And in this meantime, took over exactly how people feel about the health and what they do to treat it and the processes in which they go to get themselves, quote, healthy, are all controlled by this Rockefeller School of Medicine. And if you say anything negative about that and you're in the medical industry, they will excommunicate you by taking away your license. And then you will no longer have a license to practice medicine, like Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who blew the whistle on the vaccines. And what did he get for that? Did he get the Congressional Medal of Freedom or some equivalent of that? No, he got his license revoked. So that's what happens when you get on the wrong side of them. So they desperately want to teach people a different way of thinking about their health and about wars. And on top of that, if those were the two main focuses, 1A right below would be place their people into federal health agencies. So what you'll find is that the people that are regulating the health industry have conflicts of interest. All of the major ones come out of some form of Rockefeller control. Let's talk a little bit about eugenics and the Rockefeller Foundation, because they are enthusiastic supporters of depopulation. They always have been. This is something very weird that happens when you get up into the oligarch status. When you get up into this place where you've got all the money in the world, you start thinking, well, we love our system that we've got now because we have control over a lot of it. And should the population of the planet explode upwards, then we might not have control over it any longer. And so therefore, in order to maintain control of the scam, we should also maintain control of the population. Now, sort of on a side note, they despise humanity and want people dead. Definitely. But part of the reason why they want people dead is because they're happy with the current situation, because they're in charge of it. And anything above that, this is what Kissinger talks about in the 74 memo, anything above of, your population growing too much creates political and economic uncertainty in those countries. You can't have Pakistan double in its population in 30 years, because if you do, then the American Empire's control over Pakistan goes away, more than likely, because there's just too many other people in there, and it's screwing up the way the system runs. And so in order to prevent that, you can depopulate either after birth, meaning murder, or before birth, meaning prophylactics, right? Birth control. And so they don't call it eugenics. They call it family planning, because it sounds way better to say we have family planning available at Planned Parenthood, as opposed to come on down to Planned Parenthood to get your murder. We've got plenty of murder here. We're the number one leading cause of death in the black community, Planned Parenthood. Well, abortion in general, but where you go to get it is Planned Parenthood. So they are financial supporters of the Eugenics Record Office. This was up until 1939 with the Carnegie Foundation as partners. You'll always find the Carnegie Foundation somewhere, if not outright in partnership with the Rockefellers. You'll find them, at the very least supporting them financially, which is funny because they don't need any financial support, but they get it anyway. Rockefeller Foundation financial supporters of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute of Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics in the Third Reich. So all this talk about, oh, the Rockefellers were very sad that we had this, the World War II and Germany was going, stop, please, again, don't do that. The companies that had formerly been Standard Oil were selling fuel additives to the Nazis so that the Luftwaffe planes could fly. And had they not provided this fuel additive that only they made, then the German Air Force would have never even gotten off the ground. So if the Rockefellers wanted to stop World War II before it even happened, they could have. They did not want to. That's not in their interest. They are part of this. They are partners with Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, which is really just like borderline measuring skulls and noses. You know what I mean? Actually, I think, to be honest, I think the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute actually did measure skulls. No joke. I mean, I'm kind of like being a smartass about that, but I think part of what they were doing was doing that. How does your skull measure up, sir? Come over here. Let's check that. Ooh, that nose is a little too big. Perhaps you need to go to the concentration camps. I mean, the Germans were doing this, of course, but as we've learned, they got the concept of eugenics. They got the legalization of eugenics from California back in the early teens, 1916, I think it was, when California had some legal work going through that the Germans cited as case law and said, well, listen, they're doing it there, so we can do it here. It's fine. So the Rockefeller Foundation was deeply involved in eugenics. They supported Paul Ehrlich, you know, the guy who wrote the population bomb, the guy who said that he wanted to put sterilants in the water supply, that they would have a lottery. I'm not making this up. They would have a lottery. If you wanted to get pregnant, you would enter the lottery and then you would get your name pulled out of a hat, I guess. I don't know. And if you won, then they would give you the antidote to reverse the sterilization. The whole thing didn't make much sense. I mean, it really was like the deluded fantasies of genocidal, bloodthirsty tyrants. And guys like Paul Ehrlich were elevated. I mean, his book was like, oh, everybody, you got to read this book. I think it came out in like 77, I want to say. Read that book. It's crazy. He's a nut, you know. But again, like, if you go out and talk about how you want to shoot the president, the feds will show up at your house with handcuffs, right? If you talk about how you want to murder the entire population, they'll make your book a number one bestseller, and probably give you the Nobel Prize for chemistry along the way as well. The Population Council. So they started. You know what? I'll get to the Population Council in a little bit. Let's do this. Let's talk about who the Rockefeller Foundation donates money to. Well, the list is long. I don't have the time to get into all of them. As I mentioned, they've given away upwards of $15 billion. So it's been spread around amongst a variety of organizations. But for the simplicity of this episode, I'll just tell you some of the major ones. Council on Foreign Relations, Royal Institute for International Affairs, that's the British version of the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Bank, because if I know anything, it's that the World Bank needs more money as they're printing money into existence on their computer. But yes, the Rockefeller Foundation decided to give the World Bank more money. Probably because the Rockefellers created the World Bank and it's all one giant, you know, recirculating pool of money anyway. The Population Council, we're going to get to that in a minute. That was formed in 1952. And it's not really good. What they were doing was not great for humanity, I'll tell you that. Carnegie Endowment for Peace. Again, it's funny that Carnegie's multi-generational trillionaire empire families that are getting more money from the Rockefeller families, right? Brookings Institute, Social Science Research Center, Center for Global Development, Center for American Progress, the Associated Press. When you need to buy publicity, you just give money to the Associated Press. The World Social Forum, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Again, not necessarily looking for a handout there, but they're getting one anyway. There's two senior members of the Gates Foundation that are now senior members at the Rockefeller Foundation. So this is a Venn diagram that has a whole lot of interlocking parts between the two of them. I mean, clearly, you know, we talked about why the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation came into existence after the antitrust lawsuits brought against Microsoft, and using this as a PR move to create this charitable vehicle that you can funnel money into it, which is a giant tax shelter anyway, but you can put your money into it instead of sitting on it and watching it get taxed. You can put it in a foundation so that it becomes tax-free, and then you can use that to deploy your capital all over the place for your depopulation eugenics agenda. So Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation following very closely in the footsteps of the Rockefeller Foundation, who went through a very similar thing with the breaking up of Standard Oil, the need for a good PR firm, and also the need to have an investment vehicle that could operate tax-free and while carrying out the plans of their founders. They gave money to the American Red Cross. In fact, the American Red Cross was the first institute that they gave money to. One of these days, I'll do a deep dive on the American Red Cross. But I'm sure you'll be stunned to hear that they're up to no good. I'm sorry. I'd love to tell you that they're out there rescuing people that are in horrible natural disasters. That's the PR bullshit. The American Red Cross is up to no good. Sorry. And one of the things that the Rockefeller Foundation does, really one of the things they specialize in, if we're being honest, is washing money for the CIA by deploying it through grants. And then the people that are on the receiving end of those grants can say, it's private money. It's coming from a foundation. I'm not getting this from the government. I'm not getting this from the Central Intelligence Agency. That would be terrible if I was getting it. No. What you're doing is that the government's giving it to the CIA, or the CIA is raising the money through illicit drug sales or organ trafficking or human trafficking or whatever. And they're taking that money, and the CIA then takes their ill-gotten gains and gives it to the Rockefeller Foundation. And the Rockefeller Foundation, then they give it to the organizations that the CIA wanted to give it to in the first place, but didn't want it to look funny. So that's how they do it. It's not governmental when it's running through NGOs. And so that's the way they see things. And that's the how they justify this in terms of this partnership. And the partnership has existed for a very long time. The Rockefellers might as well have their own intelligence agencies, if you think about it, with all the groups that they have, the United Nations. I mean, the United Nations is an intelligence agency, and they have their tentacles throughout all of these countries, and they're on the ground getting information about what's really going on. And that information's fed up the chain. And next thing you know, they have their ears to the ground as far as what's going on. Let's talk about the schools that the Rockefeller Foundation gives money to. They're basically just like a list of very dangerous Ivy League schools with a couple of offshoots. Harvard, number one. Deep State U. Deep State U is Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins gets money from the Rockefeller Foundation. Again, Rockefellers were involved in the founding of Johns Hopkins, so it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody to see that their fingerprints are all over that as far as financing goes. Yale gets money from them. Princeton gets money from them. Columbia, McGill, Rockefeller University. Have you ever heard of Rockefeller University? It doesn't get a whole lot of play. Talk about automatic disqualification on your resume, man. Somebody sends a resume. Someone wants to come work for me in real estate, and they send a resume over, and they went to Rockefeller University. I'd probably call them in for an interview just to see what makes them tick. Tell me about your experiences in college. Jesus Christ. And last on this list, London School of Economics. Now, I'm sure they give money to others too, but London School of Economics, for those of you that don't know, this is a Fabian socialist school that George Soros went to. So it's pretty dangerous. I mentioned that we would get into the Population Council. Let's talk a little bit about them. It was founded in 1952. John D. Rockefeller III was the first president of the Population Council. And what they're doing is they're doing the same thing Kissinger was doing. They're taking a look internationally at who is a threat to political stability. You know, there's too many people reproducing in Ghana, and we can't have that because we've got a great relationship with the ruling party of Ghana, and they've accepted our, you know, they work well with us, and we want to maintain that relationship. So what they'll do is they'll go to the head of the country, the people that they have relationships with, and they'll say, listen, we've got to, in order to, you know, the sales pitch will be something along the lines of, hey, listen, you don't want instability in your country either, do you? You're the head of, you're the king of Ghana. And we can help you with that. What you really want to do is you want to, oh, let's just think of it like a garden, right? And you don't want to get a bunch of weeds. They'll overrun your beautiful garden and then you won't have any food. So what you want to do is you want to pull the human weeds. And this is what Kissinger talked about. And they talk about people as being human weeds and useless eaters and things like that. So frame it however you want. But the sales pitch is we, the American Empire, using cutouts like USAID, will then go to the heads of the foreign government, the country, and go to their government and say, listen, we need you to implement this policy of family planning. Nice way of saying it. And if you do this, we'll provide all the money for it. We'll provide all of the support, all the logistics that's needed for it. We will train a new managerial class inside your government to be able to run this so that it's not a bunch of white devils like us doing it. We'll make sure that that there's no blowback on you, the leader of the country. There's no blowback on us, the American Empire, because what we'll do is we'll have the NGOs like USAID use all the money, or let me rephrase that. They'll use an agency like USAID, load it up with money, disperse that to the NGOs like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, like the World Health Organization, like the Population Council that they created. And we'll use those groups to do the family planning. And if anything ever comes back and there's some sort of issue or riot, uprising, problem, then we'll just throw them under the bus and it won't affect any of us. And so that's what they've been doing over years. And the Population Council was part of this. They train native elites to be this managerial class of the countries, the third world countries that they were in the process of depopulating. And so they made it so that it wasn't an old white devil who's saying, come, little girl, come in and get this family planning that we're going to offer you. We're going to offer you this, this amazing medical procedure that will help you out. No, what they learned from the American Eugenics Society, from Margaret Sanger, from the likes of that they needed to get, if you wanted to reach the black communities and start to solve the quote Negro problem that she went on and on about, you can't do it with your white face. You need to have the black people in positions of power, the preachers, nurses, whatnot. You needed to have them on board, and then they would be the ones that would depopulate their own people, because otherwise there would just be too much initial distrust, and rightly so. So listen, you can't say these people didn't think it out. They obviously did. They've spent a lot of time working on this to make sure that it runs the right way. And if you don't get your population under control, then they have to make a financial calculation as well, because it's hard. It potentially could be hard for this country to pay back the loans. And the loans that they're getting are coming from the World Bank and the IMF. These are two agencies that the United Nations started in the Bretton Woods Agreement. So these are Rockefeller groups as well that loan money to these countries, put stipulations on it, and in order to make sure that they get their money back, they need to know that there's stability inside the country. And stability inside the country comes in the form of stability with the size of the population. So if that population gets too big, grows too quickly, you run the risk of not just losing the country that you're trying to control, but losing your investments in the country on top of that. So who's investing in the Population Council, you might ask? Well, some pretty diabolical organizations. The Ford Foundation, which is always there for depopulation. They are down for a good time. Carnegie Foundation, same thing. Mellon Family Foundation, they're there as well. And last but not least, Planned Parenthood. So shouldn't be a surprise there. Let's talk a little bit about what they did as far as promoting globalization using the Rockefeller Foundation, because this was one of the five areas of focus, international relations. And they call it smart globalization. Smart. It's got smart in the name. So, you know, it's not dangerous globalization. It's really smart the way we're doing it. And what that means is they pretend to care about the third world, but that's really just an obvious cover story to reduce the divide between, as they call it, the North and the South. They're coming at this from they're the global South, not the southern part of the U.S., but the global South, meaning South Asia, Middle East, Africa, parts of South America, and the like. So they never put Australia down in there in the South, but should be. But one of the things that they do is with regard to promoting globalization is that they say that they're going to repair weak, outmoded health systems. Again, they're coming in with this, they're coming in to sell you the concepts of vaccination, pharmaceutical drugs and the likes of that. So they're saying, well, these existing health systems are outdated. So we're going to come in, part of our globalization plan, the Rockefeller Foundation, we're going to come in here and upgrade your health systems because you need it. You know, it's a new world out there. You got to have new medical devices and new products to help you make it in this new paradigm. So they come in there offering their assistance in the form of changing the healthcare system. They talk about building resilience to environmental degradation and climate change. Alarm bells are going off all over when I read a sentence like that. They talk about addressing the risks of accelerating urbanization. The Rockefellers love urbanization. I don't know what they're talking about of addressing the risks of it. I mean, they're the ones that that pitched the idea to Mao in China that you, for the Great Leap, you got to get all these people out of the farms and into the factories. You know, we got to build up this urban core. The idea that they're going to come forward and say, we have to slow down on this urbanization. Bitch, you invented urbanization. What are you talking about? This is just straight up lies. So again, not too surprising, but they talk about reweaving frayed social contracts. Oh, you mean the social contracts that came undone when the people figured out that you were trying to murder them? You mean those? Yeah, you can do as much reweaving as you'd like. But the truth is that a segment of the population is going to wake up to what you're doing. They just will, because they have the eyes to see it. Whereas the vast majority will never understand it. They'll never understand the game. They are sheeple in some regards, and and get treated as such. So they talk about also during this promoting globalization, this very big need for easing basic survival insecurities. Now, I read that the way I read that is that by easing the insecurities, they are providing handouts. And it always sounds nice when you hand out something to somebody in need. If you do it once or every now and then, when the person is desperately in need, you can really help them out in a bind. But if you provide handouts constantly, you become a house cat. You're no longer king of the jungle. You're now dependent, waiting on mom and dad to get home so that they can fill up your bowl. And it sucks the desire out of you. And the people who live on welfare never excel. There's no incentive for them to ever exceed what they are currently doing. A lot of times, because if you get a job and start making money, then that throws you off of the free government cheese. And if you get thrown off of the free government cheese, then you have to commit to working. Well, listen, if you've just been paid to not work for a long, long time, and they go, well, you could get a job, but even if you got that job, it's only going to pay you a little bit more than what the free government handout is. Then you make a calculation and go, well, I don't know that I really want to work all that much harder for just a little bit more. And then you have to look at yourself in the mirror and realize that you are a slave. But that's the point. That's the point of globalization. Slavery with invisible chains. So, and they talk about nurturing and enabling environment for philanthropic work. I mean, please, just stop with all that. It's all buzzwords and bullshit. It's nothing more. What's happening is that non-governmental organizations are getting used by the Rockefeller Foundation to carry out their depopulation desires. That's the plan. That's what they're doing. Let's move on to something else. It's sort of a subset of promoting globalization. There's something called the Global Fund. Now, you guys have heard of the Global Fund, but you don't know that you've heard of it. It's sponsored by the Rockefeller Foundation, and their main goal is to defeat three things: HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria. And they spend about $5 billion a year I'm going to read this quote. This is straight from the Global Fund's website. To fight, this quote, fight deadly diseases, challenge the injustice that fuels them, and strengthen health systems and pandemic preparedness in more than 100 of the hardest hit countries. Sounds amazing, right? They're just out there strengthening health systems. This is exactly what the Rockefeller Foundation focuses on: medical, health, population sciences. You get to the Global Fund. What are you doing? What are you doing? Well, we're strengthening health systems and pandemic preparedness in 100 of the hardest hit countries. Oh, you mean like the United States, Canada, and Western Europe? No, not those. No, unfortunately, we only focus on Africa, South Asia, Oceania, and some players in South America. You know, the poors. That's all we're focused on, is the poors. And we want to help them with their health. Well, how do you want to help them? Well, we want to help them with vaccines. Oh, do you now? Really? They have distributed $65 billion, this Global Fund, the Global Fund, since 2002 when it was created. They've raised money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They've raised money from the Rockefeller Foundation. Do you remember the Red Campaign? About 20 years ago, maybe not quite that long. No, maybe about 20 years ago. Red Campaign? Remember U2 and Apple? Remember the red iPod that you could get? It was they sold them in a variety of colors, but if you bought the one that was red, it was like red in parentheses. And it was put out, like Bono was doing a whole thing on it. And there were a bunch of different red products. You remember that? That's the Global Fund. That's the global fun. So you get all the deep state ghouls like Bono and his buddies to be partners in this, to, you know, fight HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria, right? We're just doing good. We're doing good deeds doing that all around the world. Well, how are you fighting these? How? Educating people about them? Well, are you giving them alternatives? Are you cleaning the water? Well, no. Or are you just giving out condoms and vaccines? Well, the answer is it's just condoms and vaccines. Because that's what it's about. It's about depopulation. It's not about saving. It's not about strengthening health systems and pandemic preparedness. It's about creating pandemics. And the United States government has contributed $26.3 billion to this fiasco that started a little over 20 years ago. And you know who created it? Kofi Annan. You remember him? He was the head of the United Nations. He went on to start the Global Fund. So, you know, he's a good guy, right? He's just out there uniting nations into a world government. Let's talk about something else that the Rockefeller Foundation was into that we've talked about plenty on this, and that is lockstep. Do you remember lockstep 2010? The scenario, the simulation, the workshop to bring together a variety of people in the healthcare industry, the media, and banking to talk about what would happen in 2010 if we had a massive pandemic in 2012. And so they got together May 2010 in New York City. They love New York City for these things. And they ran out four different scenarios. One was lockstep. One was called clever together. One was called hack attack. And another one was called smart scramble. So some of the wording that came out of lockstep is insane. But you hope you don't find a sentence like this in the documentation, but you will. And the sentence goes, quote, under the guise of a pandemic, we will create a police state. Uh-oh. Really? I don't know. I mean, I hate to give these guys ideas. But if I were really trying to create a police state under the guise of a pandemic, I probably wouldn't tell everybody I was doing it. But I think they count on you not reading this. Or maybe it's revelation of the method. Maybe it's some sort of satanic arrangement where they have to tell you what they're going to do before they do it, which is probably the case for this. But it says in there, under the guise of a pandemic, we will create a police state. You mean like COVID? You mean like when you arrest people for surfing? For not wearing masks, when you put 2x4s through the basketball hoops in the public park so that people can't play basketball, or you bulldoze sand into skate parks, or you tell people they can't get on airplanes and unless they have a mask on, and if they take their mask down, then you dislocate their shoulders and throw them to the ground and beat the shit out of them. You mean that? You mean that kind of police state under the guise of a pandemic? Imagine my surprise when just 10 years later, we have a fake pandemic creating a police state. It goes on to say, quote, a world of tighter, top-down government control and more authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback by 2025. Uh-oh, as he looks at his calendar. Uh-oh, by 2025, you say, really? And what was this fictional pandemic about? What was the culprit in all this? It was bird flu. Right on schedule, right? The point of lockstep was full dictatorship run by the elites through the creation of a pandemic that appears to be real to the outside, but in actuality doesn't qualify as a pandemic on the measurables that they usually use to decide such a thing, which is exactly like COVID. Because if you take a look at there were no excessive mortalities in the United States in 2020. Did you know that? Did you know that when you go and look at the excessive numbers of deaths, there weren't 8 million more dead in 2020 because of COVID. The numbers were lower than they were in 2019. Interesting. Because I was told that everybody's dying, that hospitals are so busy that we just, you know, we're turning people away. None of that was true. They rebranded the flu. They called it something different. And it was a mild flu. It wasn't even as hard as it was the year before, which is, speaking of 2020, they were very busy in 2020, the Rockefeller Foundation. They were all over COVID, as you might imagine. Lucky guess on the timing though, right? I mean, I'm sure in April 2020, just days after the official launch of COVID, of the plandemic, the Rockefeller Foundation already had a plan in place to immediately start pushing the idea of not just COVID vaccines, but vaccine passports. And do you know why I know they had this plan in place? Because it has a name. It's called the 1-3-30 plan. 1-3-30 plan. And those numbers stand for 1 million, 3 million, and 30 million. And here's the plan, according to the Rockefeller Foundation. This came out just days after COVID started, which is an admission that they had been working on this before COVID to get this plan out into the general public. So what they said is they want testing and tracing of all Americans, every single one of us. They wanted everyone in a vaccine database, and they wanted health certificates to be linked to your IDs. And what they said, the 1-3-30 stood for this. From the beginning, they wanted 1 million people a week to be tested for COVID. Then they wanted that number to increase to 3 million a week. And then they wanted that number to increase to 30 million per week. This was their plan. Mind you, this plan was written up, conceptualized, put together before COVID. So either they're really good at predicting the future, or they knew it was coming. Quote, infection status must be known for people to participate in many societal functions. End quote. COVID passports were the plan. They were the plan before there was COVID. We know this because they write about it. We also know this because they did lockstep, which simulated this. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, 6 months prior, held Event 201 with Johns Hopkins University, another group that the Rockefeller Foundation gives money to. In this 1-3-30 plan, PCR testing was demanded, and the Rockefeller Foundation participated in a simulation in New York City, April 2020, where vaccine passports were the solution to the problem. A solution to the problem while they manufactured the reaction. This was a problem, reaction, solution situation. Problem. Oh no, deadly coronavirus is sweeping the globe. Reaction. Please, Daddy Government, come and save me from this virus that may or may not exist, but definitely has a 99.98% survivability rate and a median death age of 80. Save me from this. Solution, vaccine passports. Not just vaccines, but vaccine passports. This is what they said in the document. They wanted to link passports, vaccine passports, to your employee ID cards, regardless of where you worked. They wanted all employee ID cards to be linked to vaccine passports. They wanted them linked to the TSA passenger list. They wanted it linked to every sporting ticket that you bought. And they wanted it linked to school attendance. They wanted vaccine passports to be ubiquitous throughout society. They did not get that. We pushed back. Had we not pushed back, you would be showing your vaccine status to go to a baseball game. Your daughter would be showing it to go to sixth grade. You would have to show it every time you got on an airplane or went to work. And if you didn't have it, good luck getting a job. Good luck getting on an airplane. Good luck going to a sporting event. Good luck going to school or having kids in school. This is how they envisioned the world in the aftermath of COVID. We don't have to pretend that we know how they wanted the world to be. All we have to do is read their documents. It's all in there. It tells you what they want. Let's wrap up with this. Like I said, they were busy in 2020. They did something else called Reset the Table. This happened in July of 2020. It's a paper released by the Rockefeller Foundation that reorganizes the U.S. food production and distribution system. I don't recall us asking for this, but you're going to get it anyway. So nice of them. What does that mean exactly? Well, they talk about nutritional insecurity in the United States. They talk about how 14 million children are food insecure, five times higher than pre-COVID, which they were involved in. It's funny, they're so concerned about food insecurity for children, and yet they created the conditions in which food insecurity for children would be multiplied by five. 25% of Latino children are food insufficient, 30% of Black children. And the school closures that were demanded in the aftermath of COVID, well, not when it ended, but I should say in the heat of it all, the school closures impacted 30 million kids. Do you think the school closures were good for kids? The kids that had like a 99.9997% chance of living from it, but instead you closed the schools down for like a year and a half and verbal communication fell off a cliff and early learning kids developed much slower and anxiety went through the roof, depression went through the roof, drug use, alcoholism, all of it went through the roof. But hey, Netflix and chill, right? That's fine. They released this paper, Reset the Table, on how they envision reimagining the food distribution system of the United States. They released this paper 1 month after the World Economic Forum launched the Great Reset. A coincidence, right? Again, back to the coincidence theories. Now, this is part of a bigger plan. This is all part of a bigger plan for world governance and using the concept of a pandemic to be the justification to make sweeping changes to society. So, they mention in this paper that they plan to seize control of the food supply chain under the guise of, get ready for these three keywords that will tell you everything you need to know, under the guise of equality, fairness, and environmental protection. Because they're just so concerned with equality. Yeah. This is Agenda 2030. These are part of the Sustainable Development Goals of Agenda 2030. And I'll have you know that part of the nutritional insecurity for the United States involves reimagining the food that we eat. Back to problem, reaction, solution to move a segment of the population into eating insects. You will eat the bugs, as Klaus once said. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, if you're wondering why trillionaire intergenerational eugenics families want to help poor people, the answer is that they really don't. They're just looking to thin out the herd. So don't become a sheep. If you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. Hopefully you've rated the show. Give us 5 stars if you think we've earned it. You can connect with me at the website, macroaggressions.io. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you again soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.